What up, y'all? I'm Logan Marie Glitterbaum, and this is the Green Market Agorist podcast, where reduce, reuse, recycle meets agora anarchy action. And today we are joined by Kiara, community organizer with the Dream Defenders. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. It has been a wonderful morning. So, I guess we'll jump right into it. You are a member of the Gainesville Dream Defenders, or the Godsville Dream Defenders, as they're also known. And give us a little rundown of what exactly the organization is, what y'all do, and what your message is.
Yeah, so Dream Defenders were started after the murder of Trayvon Martin in 2012. And what we focus on is racial and economic justice in Florida. Currently, there's a lot of things happening within the decarceration efforts where we're trying to decarcerate folks, especially during COVID. Such a vulnerable population that's unforgotten. And we also were really focused on like mutual aid and basically being the support the community needs, because obviously we know that our government is not doing that for us. Right now we're just focusing on a lot of community efforts and also election work.
Nice. And, you know, you mentioned that the pandemic is going on and that it disproportionately affects people incarcerated because they are crammed in tight spaces with no way to properly social distance. And I believe it's what, like upwards of 70% of prisoners in some facilities are infected at this point with COVID. And it's becoming a massive thing. You know, how exactly are y'all pushing to decarcerate people during this time?
Right now, we have an effort of a bail fund with a few organizations, Free Prisoner, Florida Prison Solidarity, as well as Leah and ACLC, Alachua County Labor Coalition. And what we do is take funds that people donate, and we use that towards putting bail or bond for folks so we can decarcerate them. And after that process, we would have an aftercare system where we would provide groceries or any other help if needed, if you need cell phone, help paying bills, any other support to help them kind of get back into the outside like society's kind of life, whatever you want to call it. But we're just here to also push the message, get people to understand like what it's like to have a loved one incarcerated during a time. So we had like a loved ones project, video project, where we would take people's stories of how, like a mother who had her sons in Alachua County jail, and how that affected her, and just knowing that they could get COVID, and you know, COVID shouldn't be a death sentence. You know, it shouldn't be a life sentence for people in jails, and they should have the right to have like protective equipment and have like social distancing measures. So we just try to make sure that message is pushed, as well as getting people decarcerated and then also taking care of them after that process.
Yeah, I think it's so important. We often forget about the transition back into the outside world and how that can be just as much of a struggle, if not more of a struggle in some cases, than surviving in prison. I mean, we definitely see the amount of people who fall back on survival crimes once they get out, just because they don't really have that help in transitioning back into the outside world, and they don't have the resources. So they fall back on, you know, survival crimes and other things in order to just survive. So having that help is absolutely amazing, and I love that y'all do that. And y'all also
thank you.
What were you gonna say?
I was just going to say, like, if no one's gonna do it, we have to. I mean, at this point, the system was made its way to keep us oppressed and keep them oppressed, you know, second class citizens at that point.
Absolutely. Y'all also are involved in, you know, some of the prison divestment movement and such like that, correct? Because I know y'all had the campaign against Geocorp and others to try and get them to try and get groups to divest from them and try and get them to divest from prisons, right?
Yes. We actually got some Democratic politicians to pledge that they wouldn't take any kind of money from any geo groups. Also pressing other politicians to do the same. Just basically realizing that, like, you shouldn't be really willing, I mean, preaching to the people about, like, freedom, liberation, and then take that money from these people who are incarcerating and, like, keeping our people in cages. So we are pushed to just, to not only just politicize, like, our communities, but also make sure that we hold our politicians accountable to their words and what they're preaching.
And you mentioned that it's mostly, that it's Democratic politicians who have signed on. Now, is that because those are the politicians y'all are reaching out to, or are y'all reaching out across the aisle and you find that those are the only politicians that seem to be responding to the issue?
I believe it's both. It's like we reach out to politicians in general, but in this case, like, it seems so, like, the Democratic politicians are more, like, are more feasible, because obviously they want to, like, get the people's vote and realize, like, you know, like, we are basically, like, supporting your race in that point. I mean, at state. So it's just a mixture of both in that sense.
That makes sense. I mean, do y'all ever work with third parties or anything, or outreach that? I mean, I know there's not too much of a presence in Florida. I mean, I know Alachua County had a Green Party for a second.
I don't think we do any third party outreach, only because, like, Florida is a two-party state, you know, it's only Republicans and Democrats, so it's just like, I think it's just more, I guess, easier to just go for the Democrats in that sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm surprised is nowadays, especially with the growing movement in the streets, we're starting to see, you know, defunding the police be a more mainstream call, even if it gets watered down at times from its original call, which was basically abolition. But now I'm seeing a lot of people from across the political spectrum really finding their own variations of it. What I'm surprised is some constitutional conservatives are even finding common ground in, like, advocating for consent-based policing and advocating for defunding. Well, they're into defunding everything but the sheriff's department, because I don't know, there's some weird constitutional fetish where, like, the sheriff is supposedly the highest law of the land in their view. And it, mm-hmm. I mean, they do have a point in that it's a little bit more democratic than most police forces, and the fact that you get to vote for the sheriff, but I don't know that that really helps. But I don't know, it's just interesting it's so interesting to actually see that it's becoming that mainstream of a call that even people like Ammon Bundy, you know, from the Bundy Ranch standoff, and, like, you're seeing other, you know, Patriot militia types and the Boogaloo Boys coming out there. And, you know, I mean, is it a uneasy, critical alliance at some points? Is it, you know, yeah, they're not, definitely not going to agree on everything, but it's just interesting to see people even come that far. So what do you think of the growing call for defunding the police?
I mean, it's beautiful. It's great to see that people are realizing that there's too much money being spent on basically a realization and oppression and abuse, and realizing that there's not much money spent towards, like, us, like, what we actually need, and, like, ways that, like, we can reduce harm in our communities, like, just from, like, having, like, access to, like, better education, like, better social services, like, mental health clinics, and et cetera. So it's really great to see, like, call for defund police, but, I mean, it's a starting point, and I'm grateful that people are seeing it, but I feel like this should be more of a push to just, like, defund is the first step, and then, like, next step, like, it brings us closer to, like, abolition.
Yeah, and what a lot of people, you know, don't seem to realize is that that was the original call. When they said defund, they meant fully defund, as in straight up abolish. But, you know, messages get watered down, as usual. Mm-hmm. But it's a step, you know, and it's a bigger step than I thought we would see anytime soon.
Right? I was just as surprised as you are when people, like, I went on my social media one time and someone actually put, like, abolish the police. And this was, like, a celebrity. And I was just like, what? I'm like, we're in this time now? I'm like, wow, I was just, like, working on this. And to see it and people, like, defund the police. I'm just like, yes, yes. But, I mean, the sad part about it is just, like, now that defund, that word, it's also very, can be detrimental, because a lot of people are actually thinking that we're trying to take away safety and take away, like, security, but we're just trying to teach them or show them that, like, one, safety can be reimagined and we can find safety within each other, and two, that the money that we're taking from, like, this, like, from police is to put into our community, so therefore, like, you don't have to worry about, like, you know, if you're going to get, like, some type of, like, social services or programs this month. So it's been interesting to see, like, the reactions, especially in Montreal County. It's been really, wow, it's been something.
What has the reaction been around Alachua?
So, like, right now, when we're pushing the defund GPD, a lot of people, I'm not sure if you know Rector House is a social program for young Black boys who find yourself to be quote unquote, like, at risk or, like, you know, deviant. And a lot of people, a Riker House is actually, like, a law enforcement, like, diversion program. So a lot of folks think that we're trying to just defund Riker House, and I hopped on the call for the city commission meeting about the budget for the GPE, and a lot of people were just expressing how, like, they're trying to, that people who are pushing defund GPE are trying to take away, like, this place where their sons were able to thrive, and, like, they're able to, like, learn and grow, and they're thankful for Riker House. And what we're trying to explain to them is, like, it's not like we're taking away, you know, that program for these kids. Like, we can have that through another system. Like, it doesn't have to be through law enforcement. And then we can still have social programs, and it's not, we're not just trying to take money and just, like, say, like, you know, fuck the police, and that's it. Like, well, yeah, fuck them too, but it's just, like, also, like, here, get that money and give it to the people who need it, exactly, like, directly. So it's been, like, kind of, like, difficult to get people to understand, so that's why, like, I mean, even now, like, I'm trying to stop using the word defund and start using words like reallocate, something more, like, something that people can understand more, because when you say reallocate, it's like, okay, let's go towards something better, or divest, invest, but more so reallocate. But that's what we've been seeing thus far. It's just a lot of pushback when it comes to, like, services for kids, and that's the one thing that we're trying to, like, allocate for, is the services for kids. So I think just there's, like, a miscommunication with the message at this point.
Yeah, I forget exactly where, but I was looking into it, and there's already two, I think at least two different places that have done, and, like, have already basically done what a lot of folks are talking about, and even before this movement really kicked off, at least one of those places already did, where they did lower the police department's budget and reallocate a lot of that towards mental health services and other, you know, community services and such. And what's surprising is the way they did it. I believe it was called, like, the CAHOOTS program or something. I forget what it stood for, but they have police backing for that. Because they even convinced the police that, like, you know, hey, you don't need to respond to everything. This actually makes your job easier and frees you up to go deal with actual violent crime.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I do think that, yeah, talking, framing it as reallocating, like, really does make people think about it differently. And, I mean, I hate to say it, but we gotta get people that we really disagree with politically on board with this. Otherwise, it's not gonna happen. And so, that include, if we can find a middle ground where, you know, like that, that even the cop, you know, and even spin the propaganda to where the cops can be in favor of it, then hell, it's a step. You know, but I don't expect many cops to be in favor of decreasing their power, period. So
exactly. I mean, and also just like, and speaking on like getting cops to understand that too, would be like, it's amazing because, like, I mean, one, we're not even like 100% there. It's like abolition. So it's just like, we kind of don't really get what we want, but at the same time, like, they're still having police. It's just like, a lot of people actually don't realize how much money the police gets. You know, like, these people think they're just, like, working, like, you know, $40,000, like, jobs, but then they don't really think about the equipment that they, like, get and, like, the gadgets and stuff. Like, I think our GPD gets, I think, like, 80 million around that, like, number. And, but then we are wondering why, like, kids on the east side of Gainesville aren't being at their proficiency level for their grades. So it's like, we're not doing this to like increase crime and but it's also, you made a really good point about like, it's gonna make their jobs easier to have like less things to worry about, because to think that one person can play so many roles, like, you know, doctor, de-escalator, mental health person, it's very just like bizarre. Just like not someone cannot be equipped with all of that. Not everyone can be equipped with all that.
Especially when they're basically given military style training in order to deal with those type of issues. You can't solve mental health crises. You can't solve, you know, any victimless or nonviolent crimes, quote unquote, with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't. And I don't know. It's just wild to see that people still defend that idea. And it's usually on, oh, but what if they go, you know, what if they become violent? And it's like, nurses deal with that all the time. Doctors deal with that all the time. And they don't end up shooting people. And, you know, I heard someone make the false claim of, oh, well, they, you know, and yes, this is not a totally false claim of sometimes they do use drugs to subdue people, but like, you know, that's not their main, that's usually not their main go-to method of subduing unruly patients.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, even then, police actually also administer drugs in order to try and subdue people. You know, ketamine use is actually a lot more prevalent than people realize. Police give people ketamine to try and calm them down. And it's a really fucked up practice.
Exactly.
So, I mean, yeah, there's definitely, and I hear criticisms too of like, oh, we're defunding and, or reallocating and putting, you know, this money towards, you know, mental health resources and other resources like that. But a lot of people claiming that those systems as well have their own issues with racism. And, you know, I see some people saying that that's a reason not to divert the funds towards those programs. And I hear other people saying that, no, we just need to deal with the racism within those programs because those programs are still necessary. And I don't know. It's just interesting to see that conversation play out. And I was curious as to your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I see where their concerns are, but it's the difference on how these systems were derived. Like, I think mental health is like a new thing. I think people had to, mental health was curated from like the police system. Like, they used to, or they still incarcerate people with mental health because they're not really sure how to deal with these people. So obviously, you see that the money's not there to actually like educate folks and also like support those who have mental health illness, I mean mental illnesses, and just realize like police and prisons were like created like in like 1800s and even before then, like to like enslave people, where mental health is starting to like realize like, okay, mental health is it's important, and it's like, and mental illnesses are like natural, it's okay, and like people, we're starting to realize like how important it is to actually put your mental health first. So it's a system, it's a thing that we're learning, just like how we like how gender is a new, like gender is a new thing for most people, like, oh my gosh, I didn't know it was actually like, you know, like a social construct. Like, yes, it is. And so like it's something that we're learning, it's something like something that we can like create and make it beautiful. Whereas prisons and police weren't made from the start to like help people. So I think like reallocating the funds is like be a great way to like put more money into like workers and proper like facilities and practices so that we can actually help these people, because like we don't, no one knows the next time they might be in a mental health crisis or their family member will be. But no one wants to be locked up in a prison or be oppressed by the police on a daily basis. So it's just like, for me, I understand their worries and everything. You just have to look at it from like a broader view and realize like, if we really want it, we can have it. We can make it happen.
And I imagine if we divert some of that money towards education, then we'd have more opportunities for more people to get involved in the medical industry and become therapists and become psychiatrists and psychologists and get involved in mental health. And as as more people are able to get involved in that, and we're able to have more of a diversity of voices and backgrounds, we'll probably improve that system, I imagine.
Yeah, and only also just like if you reallocate that money towards education and mental health, we can have actually like counselors inside of schools to talk to students rather than like my counselor, all they did was really help me with like putting together classes. Like I couldn't look to the counselor and tell him like, hey, I'm having problems at home, or I'm like feeling this kind of way. So if you actually had mental health, like if you had like counselors to talk to kids rather than just like advisor classes, it could be, we can have a different like a different culture and a different like nation. And not only that, just like we have more like some schools have more cops than they do like mental health like psychologists or like counselors or nurses. So it really shows you like what we are feeding our children when the moment they're in school. Like we're not helping them with like their mental, we're just like policing them.
Yeah, well, I mean, modern schools are prisons, basically.
Basically.
I mean, the school to prison pipeline is extremely real and unfortunate, and it's wild to see that some people are advocating that we increase that as a response to like school shootings and things instead of increasing mental health services and such.
Yes, it's just it's based on fear at this point, and it's totally valid. I'm not taking that away from them because like I'm fearful too when I go to school. But
Absolutely.
it's just like what is that police officer doing?
Hey y'all, I just wanted to take a minute to remind our listeners that our friends at Brave Botanicals are offering a free ounce of kratom to first-time customers. So be sure to check out the link in the description, take advantage of that, and check out their wide selection of kratom, CBD, and natural health products while you're there. Now back to the show.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what my phone just did, and say, like, I mean, you know what? Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. All right, I'm back. There's no interruptions. Oh my gosh. That's horrible. Okay. As soon as I started talking, I was like, sure.
Fun times. Okay. So.
I mean, I think we left off on police and school shootings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a weird response to that problem, but it's a response we see all too often in this country of law and order is the way to go. I mean,
yeah.
Do you even see that in this election? That's yes, Trump's yes. entire rhetoric, that's Kamala Harris's rhetoric, that's all of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, it's... That's all they know is just policing people, and just thinking that the law can just control people. But the law is, you know, definitely not just like in stone. Like it's not infinite amongst like all cultures, all people. But that's the way you try to control people is just through law. And law is just like honestly words, and it's also very just interpretive. So. They run their life based on fear, and that's why policing is such a big thing right now. People are just scared. So,
absolutely, and it was definitely weird to see, like, the amount of people who were claiming to support the Black Lives Matter movement at the same time as calling for more police in schools. And
yeah.
That was just such a weird contradiction, but it just goes to show how a lot of people don't seem to really fully understand the movement and what the calls are for.
Yeah, I mean, as you have, like, Black Lives Matter supporters, and you have, like, Black Lives Matter, like, abolitionists, and, like, the major line between there is the people who just think, like, Black Lives Matter... it's only about like police brutality, and there's people who think that Black Lives Matter is about like the prison industrial complex itself, as well as like the daily policing of Black people and the oppression of Black people amongst all systems. So it's really weird to see like people support police but don't like police brutality. By the way, police brutality is not just about like murdering people or like abusing people when you're like in custody, but also about the daily policing that we have over our lives, and like it's really a big dynamic. It's a really big difference, and like that's why like, I separate myself as like a Black Lives Matter like abolitionist. So like when I talk to people about like Black Lives Matter, I'm like, well, if you still support police, then you really don't really understand the true meaning of police and how it's affecting Black people every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, people seem to forget that living in the South, a lot of our police forces that were in, you know, enshrined in, by the state formed out of slave patrols and yes. were first hired by the state to, on behalf of corporations, to squash union efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And so people think that we can reform an institution that was founded on that basis into something that's useful and good for the community? No.
I mean, even if you have community members that you know and love and just like as like police officers and sheriffs, they're still being part of the system and like allowing a system to exist that just was really just made off of just protecting property. I mean, even, like, back then, like, what Black people, slaves were property, so that even includes slaves. And it just, even now, like, they can't really act, have to say true within the law and within their, like, their abilities. So, like, even if you're like, well, that's my brother, he's a great cop. I'm like, well, he's still inflicting these practices and still allowing the system to exist. So, like, this good cop, bad cop, it's getting old.
Yeah, I mean, can you be a good person with good intentions when going in? Sure, maybe, but you once you actually run up against what the system is and experience it firsthand, on that, you got to make a choice. And the people that do try to reform that from the inside don't get anywhere. They're usually fired or, you know, in some cases, murdered. And you can't be a good cop. The system isn't set up for that. There's no way to be a good cop in that system. You either get fired or you end up becoming corrupted. There's really no middle ground to that.
There isn't. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and even just the culture of policing and just, like, you're unconsciously given these, like, stereotypes about people, and then you're forced to reconcile and solve issues a certain way, so you're not really trying to do it your way, but just do it the way that you were taught. So in some sense, you really just don't have much discretion. It's not really up to you at the end of the day, and you're also getting paid, so you're not going to really try and sacrifice that as well.
Yeah. And then the police unions, I mean, I'm all normally pro-union, but the police unions seem to do nothing but protect bad cops. I mean, not nothing but that seems to be their main focus now, especially.
Mm.
And it's absolutely disgusting. And I like the fact that there is a push to disaffiliate police unions from the AFL-CIO, and I hope that the AFL-CIO wises up and, you know, goes through with that.
I hope so, too, honestly. I mean, the whole system needs to go, and it starts with a lot of things, so hopefully that goes through.
Yeah. It's also really cool to see, like, qualified immunity becoming a bigger topic and people pushing. I mean, you both have, you know, some DSA, you know, Justice Democrat types pushing for it. You have libertarians like Justin Amash pushing for it. And it's cool to see that some folks in Congress are talking about it. Now, whether it would actually get anywhere, I'm not convinced right now, but, you know, we just gotta keep pushing.
Yeah. I mean, conversation is beautiful. It's just that actions are better. Actions are preferred.
Yeah.
Actions is what we want.
Right? Well, I mean, shit. Honestly, I didn't expect these protests to get, you know, I didn't expect people to be taking to the streets this militantly, and I'm not meaning violent when I say militant, I just mean, you know, actually out there in full force, not backing down no matter what the police do, and it's inspiring so many people that to join that weren't part of it before, and, you know, and seeing the police response. I mean, the wall of moms, the wall of vets, like, things like that, that in the media eye brings legitimacy to it. I mean, I kind of think it's bullshit that that's what needs to lend legitimacy to it, but in a lot of people's eyes, unfortunately, same thing with Standing Rock. As soon as, Veteran Stand joined, you saw a whole lot more people pay attention.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, weird military fetishism, but if it works for the cause, it works, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, like you said, it shouldn't have to take that to, like, legitimize the situation, but, you know, I mean, the support, using your allies, you know, it helps.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, when people are dying, you kind of got to take allies where you can and push through as best you can. So, you know, I touched earlier, just curious, what do you think of Joe Biden's vice presidential announcement.
Oh my gosh, when I seen that, I was laughing. I was like, this is ridiculous. This is, I don't even know how we, like, how we got to this point. 2020 is a year. This is, like, the year of all years I've been alive. And just to know, Kamala Harris's, like, history and her oppression for, like, of Black people was just like, wow, we have two freaking, like, fake ass people, like, repping us, like, it's basically neoliberalism. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, neoliberalism.
Thank you. I don't know what I was going to say wrong. My mouth is like, no, you're not going to say it right. But
no worries.
They're just, right now I'm pushing in the moment, pushing on propaganda, and I feel like they chose Kamala Harris because it was great in the moment. They're like, oh my gosh, it's Black Lives Matter right now. You know, you have like Joe Biden who was with Barack Obama, so he's great for Black people. And then you have Kamala Harris who's a Black woman, even better for Black people. Like, we have to push a woman. And honestly, it would have to be a woman. And they also know, like, just to get some more votes, a Black woman would be best. And I see on people's, like stories and Instagrams, like, yeah, Kamala Harris, you know, a Black woman finally representing the, like, Black community. And then I actually got to see the comments and people, like, you do not know her history. So right now you're being very blind. Like, she locked up, like, over 2,000 folks over the possession of marijuana. And these are, like, majority Black people. And, mm-hmm. like, she thrives off of this. Like, and just for people to be blindsided, the same way you're blindsided by Barack Obama's, like, election and, like, a lot of how he was president, they're just like, oh, well, he's a Black person, you know, that's amazing. But I'm like, yo, you can't just, like, you know, give him praise because of his identity. Like, he's still doing things that aren't really for us. So to see this whole thing happening right now, honestly, I'm just, like, laughing. I'm going to be voting in my local elections, national elections. I had to really think about that one. Just like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? What's going on? What's happening in America?
I mean, to be fair, it's the local elections that count, if anything, because that's where a lot of the change happens, and a lot of the things that people want out of the president, it's your local politicians, your congresspeople, like, those are the people that actually pass those things.
Exactly. And I learned a lot this past year about how, like, how it directly affects, like, communities. And the fact that people overlook local elections, that's why the same people are just, like, elected every year, because no one's really voting. But just to see how much, there's, like, so many, like, positions and, like, so many positions, like, really up for a re-election, and it's like it surpasses even how many are up in, like, the national elections. Obviously, it's like one versus like 10. So you have like 10 people who have different jobs, really affecting your daily life in your community, and people aren't really, like, paying attention to that right now. And that's why, like, we really encourage people, especially, like, in Dream Defenders, like, really understand how these people take a role in how your daily life is going to be, like, it's going to be in the future, because, I mean, even your city commissioners, but it's just really, really sad to see how it's overlooked and not really, like, given that much attention, especially how, like, detrimental it is.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, I myself and a lot of our listeners are anarchists, but I always found the hardline anti-voting stance to be kind of ahistorical and contradictory, because a lot of anarchists have utilized electoral politics, and there was a concept known as destructive voting for a while, which was mainly using state politics in order to kind of dismantle the system. And that, you know, that can work to a degree. You get local politicians in office and you know, in things like the drug war, in, you know, things like that, you defund the police, you imprison slavery, like, these type of things can be achieved. I mean, shoot, in, you know, when I was living in Gainesville, the Occupy Prisons Coalition that helped push for our city council over there to end the government use of prison slavery for their local projects. Like, sure, it, I mean, they're still using prison labor for a lot of other shit around there, but it was, you know, at least a small victory in the scope of things, and, you know, still a significant victory considering we were, it was the, it's still the only county in Florida that has done any such thing. And that came with pressuring local politicians and meeting with them and, you know, showing up to city commission meetings and all that in, you know, while also participating in a lot of direct action to back that up and, you know, kind of put some fear into them in a way. You know, and that's, it goes hand in hand.
Yeah, it does. It's what's needed. Like, you got to not only talk to them, but, like, literally show them how it's affecting us. And, like, and they really, they know that people aren't paying attention. So to have people pay attention, it's like, oh, dang. We can't really look away now.
Yeah. And also, local elections is where you can get, like, independent candidates and third-party candidates to actually have a fighting chance. So people that are talking about, you know, wanting an alternative to the corporatist Republicans and Democrats, like, that's your alternative there. You know, and not only that, but then you do have people who run under the major party labels who genuinely have better politics because they're more rooted in the communities, too, and they're, you know, sometimes your local, you know, because you do. Right now you have a lot of local people running as Democrats thanks to the DSA, but who have genuinely, like, good anti-corporatist politics, you know, like, good, you know, and flat-out leaning towards full-on anti-capitalism in a lot of respects. And that's just, I don't know, it's beautiful to see that there is an uptick in those things.
I agree. I definitely agree.
But,
I definitely agree. Indeed. I know we were talking about just, like, the whole aspect of defunding, and just how, like, people are not really understanding what defunding means. And then also how this, like, defunding is like, the next step towards abolition.
Yeah. And, I mean, do you, you know, what are some of the ways that you think are better ways to kind of market that? Because you were talking about, you know, talking about reallocation instead of defunding and things like that. You know, do you see other missing pieces or other, you know, opportunities to kind of remarket things or things that we should add to our message to kind of make it more appealing, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, just, like, specific, like, wording, I know, like, I heard, like, fund kids, not cops. And, like, at that point, you have no real choice, like, how are you going to argue that if you, like, how are you going to argue against it? Like, so you want to fund cops and not kids, you know? Like, so about, like, rewording certain campaigns. Also, just, like, really putting front, like, putting up front, like, exactly what your end goal is. Like, a lot of people think, like, the process is, like, kind of, like, it's hard because everyone's like, oh, you're trying to, like, defund police and, like, make us, like, what are you gonna do when, my favorite thing to hear is people like, what are you gonna do when there's a killer at your door and you have no one to call? And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, they go to the most extreme cases So, like, I mean, what you have to do is, like, really put up front, like, the end goal here. Like, do you want better, like, housing? Do you want, you know, better education for your children? Do you want mental health services for, like, your family members, your friends? Well, if you want these things, let's take partial of the budget from police and let's put that towards these things. At this point, like, we're still giving them what they want. They still have the police, like,
yeah,
and you still have some type of protection. But, like, in Alachua County, I think they passed on, I think it was, it's like, excuse me if I'm wrong, but I think it's $3 million. I think for body cams, for police body cams. And I'm just like, this is the same money that could go towards, like, our children. Like, their children, they're still deciding if children should go back to school in person. Well, if not, well, let's put that money and give families free internet or provide them, like, laptops or computers for the children. You know, like, no, this is not what we're thinking about. We're thinking about body cams because we want accountability. That's not the accountability that we want. To see, like, your people, like, your family members dying or being harassed by the police through body cam, that's not what I want. You know, and I know some people for the city commission's call were just saying how, like, well, they want accountability. We're trying to fund body cams, and now they don't want that kind of accountability. And I'm just like, you're not looking at the message that you're trying to send. You're just being upset that we want to take away something that you're finding security in, but at the same time that's oppressing you, and you're not really, you know, noticing that. So it's really sad to see, like, you know, fellow Black community members not really understanding, like, the concern that police have, like, have in our community, like, how dangerous they are. But, I mean, that's the rhetoric police, you know, push. Like, you need us for safety. You need us to feel secure. So, basically, I kind of, like, went on a tangent. But just to put the focus back on the end goals versus just, like, the process itself. Like, let's talk about what we want. And then you can see how we can get there versus, like, you know, we're defunding the police. And, like, where this money's going to? We're just taking out money. You know, we're just actually putting it towards something more beautiful.
Yeah. So. And it's funny, you know, you mentioned body cams. And, you know, I saw a definite uptick in, like, people advocating for body cams, you know, when this, especially in light of a lot of this, but what people don't seem to realize is that the same people selling the police body cams are the same people selling the other surveillance equipment that they use against us.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same mm-hmm. corporations that we are helping fund by doing that, and all we're doing is increasing the surveillance state in that respect. And I'm not saying, mm-hmm. you know, we definitely should film cops every time we see them and have the chance. I'm all about cop watching, but, you know, to think that body cams are the answer or the end-all be-all is so weird to me, especially when people don't realize that some of them are being outfitted with, like, facial recognition technology, from what I've heard. Uh-huh. And they're not pointed at the cops, they're pointed out at the public. You know, all those cameras, they are worn on the cop's body, but they are pointed out at the public. And that seems to get lost in the conversation. And it's really worrisome to see this inconsistency where some of the same people fighting against the surveillance state are also advocating an expansion of the surveillance state.
Yeah. It's all contradictions at this point. I mean, I totally hear that. And, like, to add on to just, like, the body cams, they have these body cams, but then they won't release the footage if something happens, and we have to fight them to release the footage. Like, why have these body cams if we're not even going to see, like, how they're responding to situations? It makes no sense.
Yeah. I mean, if, you know, if you really want body cams to be effective, put all the live streams on YouTube and let anyone watch them all the time.
Exactly. It's perfect. You can pick the officer you want to watch. Like, then you get Officer, like, Johnson right now, and then just watch them.
Right? That would make cop watching a hell of a lot easier. We could do it from home.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh my gosh, that's perfect.
But they're never going to do that.
No, they're not. No, they're not. They know. They know better.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know. I really just absolutely find it amazing how far this conversation has progressed. It is still not nearly far enough.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm proud of people for pushing this far, I have to say. And I'm proud of people for continuing to be out there, for not backing down, for, you know, laughing at when fucking, you know, not putting up with the Democrats' bullshit and trying to cater to them while not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. And just kind of laughing that off and being like, okay, we're just going to do direct action instead because you aren't offering solutions.
Yeah.
And seeing how, like, this is radicalizing so many people to, you know, to actually re-examine their politics, their prejudices, and, you know, give more radical political ideals a second look or a third look and actually consider them more. Because we're not going to get out of this without some radical change.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, it's really beautiful. I mean, I'm really enjoying, like, the people, like, I became, like, an abolitionist, like, a year ago. So, to see people, like, become abolitionists, like, in, like, a few months, I'm just like, wow, I'm loving this.
Was there any, like, one particular thing that, or, you know, any particular thing that kind of pushed you into being a full-on abolitionist?
For me, it's funny, like, when I heard the word abolitionist, I was just like, this sounds, like, right, this sounds amazing, and, like, I actually had, like, not really any pushback. Like, usually when people become, like, abolitionists, or, like, when they question abolition, the first question they ask, like, what about the murderers, what about the rapists? Like, I didn't even, like, think about that. I was just like, wow, like, this is a world I want to see. Like, growing up personally, like, I just knew, like, obviously, growing up as a black person, it was like, police aren't really our friends. And just to see, like, just to learn about the history, it just made it even more clear to me. Growing up, I also wanted to be involved in the criminal justice system. I wanted to be, like, a juvenile lawyer, but more so not on the prosecution side, obviously on the defense side. You really want to, like, get kids out of, like, jails because it makes no sense why you're putting them in there. And then I realized, like, just, like, the things that I knew growing up and, like, how I'm growing as a person, like, abolition was just my answer. It was, like, this is, like, what I see the world to look like in, like, a year or two from now, hopefully. I'm radical, like, using my radical imagination, but this is what I hope to see. And honestly, like, it wasn't, like, anything, like, really pushed me. It was just, like, I think my life, like, what I experienced pushed me in general. And to know, like, a few of my family members who were, like, brutalized by the police, that really also pushed me. And then also I'm vegan, so that kind of pushed me, too. So just, like, a few of my, just my characteristics and, like, my experience really helped me. And then to see just all this bullshit that's happening was just, like, a major push.
That's wonderful to hear. I'm glad that, you know, you were able to find that community and that in your journey to actually, you know, help push that even further. Because I know Gainesville is the perfect place to really get involved in a lot of that type of shit, especially as far as Florida goes.
Yeah, right? Right, honestly. And, I mean, Gainesville is, like, so catfish. Like, they always want to be like, we're progressive, but they're definitely liberal. But the organizations within Gainesville are really, like, radical. And they're, like, really, like, there's, like, many of them who are abolitionists and who are pushing for, like, you know, ending prison slavery, etc. So, like, yeah, the organizations, you can find beautiful political homes in Gainesville. I love to see them.
One more thing I kind of want to touch on before we wrap up, and, you know, anything else you wanted to talk about as well. But I know, Dream Defenders, you mentioned before, is, you know, helping do bail funds, helping, you know, get people decarcerated and, help them transition back into, you know, the outside world. And, just curious how people could get involved and help that.
Yeah, of course. This is like my favorite part of the conversation. Nah, I'm playing. This is like one of my favorites. Just like volunteering, like it doesn't have to be Dream Defenders, but like an org that you find like your political home and you're just like educating yourself, because like the first step, like when I became a Dream Defender, they always talk about political education, and like when I first became one, I learned a lot that I didn't even know, like the stuff that they don't teach you in schools. And just like political is personal, like at the end of the day, like what affects you, like what's happening politically is going to affect your personal life. So like you have to educate yourself on the history, on what's going on now, because if you don't, you're just living in like you're living in oblivion. So I think education is very important. And also just, like, not only just educating yourself, but taking action, like, going out there and just, like, volunteering. There's mutual aid efforts, community-led, like, alternatives that people are trying to push. And, like, personally, I'm not, like, 100%, financially, like, stable. So, like, but if you are and if you have the funds, like, donate and give to, like, your organizers, give to the community, give to the 352 Freedom Fund that we have, and just support in many ways that you can, because like you don't have to be black to realize this is like a cause that you should be supporting, and being white, you have to also learn how you can be an ally. So learn how to be that. Ask people like, how can I support you during this time, and like, or just like taking that role in supporting, but also realize that this is not really like your fight, but you're supporting it, and you're amplifying these voices. So it's just as many things, but the first step is to be educated, and you can find your political home. If not, like search for like how to be more like politicized. I hope that I use the right word. Yes.
Yeah. Do you have any other advice for white allies who would like to just help in general?
Yeah, I mean, like, learn how to be a white ally, because I've experienced, I mean, as a black organizer in Gainesville, a black, like, femme, I experienced times where people were occupying a space that wasn't really theirs. Like, we're just having, like, an event for, like, black lives, and we had people who weren't black leading the space, and there were black people leading the space, and it was just, like, you had to recognize, like, this is not, like, if it's not your cause, like, you had to, like, take a step back, learn how to step up and step back. And so, like, I literally had to tell them, like, there's beautiful, like, black people in here who are giving, like, opinions and also, like, giving advice and, like, what we want to see for our, like, our direct action. But you're not listening. So you have to learn, like, as a like a white ally, you have to learn when to step back, and when to support. And that you have to, like, you have to ask, you have to know. And I know a lot of people are excited to be involved and everything like that, but this is not just about, like, you holding up a sign and yelling out things. This is literally about, you know, my life and the next person, like, the next black person's life. And people were being marginalized. So you have to be very important. Very aware of how you take up space. I wouldn't really take, like, I would amplify, like, undocumented folks' voices. I wouldn't take up their space. You know, you have to learn when it's yours and when it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good advice. And I thank you for that. Was there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we wrap up?
Just mostly about, like, really paying attention to our, like, vulnerable, forgotten folks, you know, our incarcerated folks who are in prisons and jails, suffering, those who are like, and cash bail, because being poor doesn't mean that you are guilty. So we have the 352 Fund in Gainesville, 352 Freedom Fund in Gainesville, supported by Dream Defenders, also ACLC, Alachua County Labor Coalition. We have Florida Prison Solidarity, and also Leah. So if you can, definitely send a dollar that way, because we're freeing folks, we're taking care of them, and we want our people like back in the communities. Like, prisons and police are basically tearing apart families daily, and especially during these times, like, we need each other more than ever. So,
yeah. And where can people find out more about Dream Defenders or any other projects or personal things that you would like to promote?
Yes, if you go on our Facebook, you can find us at Dream Defenders. If you're looking for our Gainesville chapter, you can go and look up Godsville, that's G-O-D-D-S-V-I-L-L-E, Godsville Dream Defenders. You can also, like, find our website, dreamdefenders.org. And also, you can, if you go on our Facebook, you can usually see our Instagram from there. It's kind of hard for me to explain the way it's spelled. So, if you go on Facebook, you can see our Instagram as well as our Twitter. But it's just good to stay informed. We have beautiful things. We just posted a voting guide for empowered communities, which caters to the local elections and people that we feel and the community feels will provide equitable means and also equitable solutions to the community. So people use those guides as information they can use when they try, when they go vote for our local elections, which the early election ends today, and then the election's on the 18th. But we posted that so people can be aware of, like, who's really fighting for our communities, a lot of, like, Black beautiful femmes who are also trying to take control and, you know, be better support. So we post things that are very helpful, also direct actions, also things to get involved in. And, yeah, it's we're trying to make sure people are staying informed, because if you're going to be on social media, you might as well just, like, educate yourself in the process.
Absolutely. And I'll be sure to put the links in the description to social media, as well as the 352 Freedom Fund, and, you know, anything else. And, yeah, I don't know if there was any last things you wanted to say to our listeners, but...
Yeah, you'll become an abolitionist, yes!
Hell yeah. Well, thank you so much, Kiara, for coming on today. This has been absolutely wonderful. I've enjoyed this entire conversation despite all our technical difficulties.
Yes, no, thank you, Logan. Like, honestly, like, even, like, talking to you, I'm just like, y'all have to, I'm gonna have to go read and learn more even now. I'm just like, because you're very, very intelligent.
Aw, thank you. But, yeah, well, I wish you the best of luck, and definitely, you know, keep up the good fight. Don't back down.
Never.
You know, as my old friend used to say, raise hell, stay well, and don't let the bastards grind you down.
Yes! Oh my gosh, I'm gonna keep that. I'm gonna steal that.
Alright, y'all. Well, thank you so much for joining us this episode. If you would like to support the podcast, we do have our new expanded merch store. We have some random beauty and health and cleaning supplies that are all homemade, all natural, you know, hemp oils and all that fun stuff. And we also have our Patreon, our Subscribestar, Bitbacker, PayPal, coin payments, all that stuff. You know, leave us a good review, all that fun stuff, share with your friends, and boost these voices, because they definitely need to be heard.
Yes.
So, and We'll catch you next time.
It's unfortunate that we even have to say Black Lives Matter. I mean, if you go through history, nobody ever gave a fuck. I mean, you can kill black people in the street. Nobody goes to jail. Nobody goes to prison. But when I say Black Lives Matter and you say All Lives Matter, that's like if I was to say Gay Lives Matter and you say All Lives Matter. If I said Women's Lives Matter and you say All Lives Matter, you're diluting what I'm saying. You're diluting the issue. The issue isn't about everybody. It's about black lives at the moment. But the truth of the matter is, they don't really give a fuck about anybody if you break the shit all the way down to the low fucking dirty ass truth.
We say that black lives matter, but truthfully they really never have. No one ever really gave a fuck. Just read your bullshit history books. But honestly, it ain't just black. It's yellow, it's brown, it's red. Anyone who ain't got cash, poor whites that they call trash. They can't fuck with us once we realize we're all on the same side. They can't split us up and let them prosper off the divide. They can't fuck with us once we realize we're all on the same side. They can't split us up and let them prosper off the divide. Don't fall for the bait and switch. Racism is real, but not it. Whoever can't fight back. But now we gotta change all that. The people have had enough. Right now it's them against us. This shit is ugly to the core. When it comes to the poor, no lives matter. America's always been a place that's judged by skin. And racism is real as fuck. Ain't no way to play that off. And in the eyes of the law, black skin has always stood for poor. This is basic shit. They know who they're fucking with. They can't fuck with us once we realize we're all on the same side. They can't split us up and let them prosper off the divide. They can't fuck with us once we realize we're all on the same side. They can't split us up and let them prosper off the divide. Don't fall for the bait and switch. Racism is real, but not whoever can't fight back. But now we gotta change all that. The people have had enough. Right now it's them against us. This shit is ugly to the core. When it comes to the poor, no lives matter.
You never seen pulling rich people out of their cars in their neighborhood because they know they got lawyers. They know they'll sue their ass. They can tell who the fuck was. Unfortunately, black or brown skin has always meant poor. They profiling you, kid. They know you can't fight back, but we about to.
Investigators say they are reviewing body camera and dash cam video of Tuesday's shooting. Police say that Keith Lamont Scott did have a gun in his hand when an officer shot him. A new picture of the scene shows something at Scott's feet. A source tells our Charlotte affiliate it may be a gun, but people in the neighborhood say that the father of four was holding a book instead.
Officer Vincent